Well, hi, everyone, and welcome to the Dr. Linda Mintel Show. I'm your host, Dr. Linda Mintel, the relationship doctor, and I'm here along with my co-host, Chris Weigel. And every weekend, we're here and we're doing life together. And we're so glad you've joined us.
That's right, Dr. Linda. I'll tell you, I'm glad to be here, but wow, I've had this headache all day.
Oh.
It's been a big, bad headache. I've heard these types of headaches could cause brain tumors. I'm really afraid I've got a tumor in my brain. I've read this on the internet. I think it's a tumor.
Chris, I'm almost completely certain you don't have a brain tumor. Okay, I'm going to guess that you're saying this because of our topic today. We're talking about living with a hypochondriac.
Okay, you got me.
Are you doing that?
I was being a bit dramatic, and yes, that's why I said that. But do you have any members in your family that sound like a hypochondriac? I mean, maybe you don't want to say they are, because they could be listening.
That's right. Well, we've had a few over the years. And yeah. How about your family? I didn't ask you.
Not that I know of, no.
No, yeah. they probably are listening.
They probably are, right.
Listen, I think most families have one or two people who excessively worry about their health. And that's what hypochondriac is. That's what we're talking about today. This type of excessive worry where it's focused specifically on health. And we're going to talk about this and help us all understand it better and talk about how to deal with someone who struggles with this and has what we're calling excessive health worries.
And it is hypochondria.
Hypo.
Lots of say hypochondria.
That's true.
But it is hypochondria.
Yeah.
Well, we found a funny internet site on Healthline. It says these are quotes that only a hypochondriac will understand. And these are just fun, and we're not making fun of people who really struggle. But sometimes we need to just laugh a little bit at our own problems. And I think we've lost that in our PC culture. So here we go.
Okay.
Here we go. A sneeze is never just a sneeze. It could be a cold, the flu, or maybe even Ebola.
Okay. Here's what I like. Some people start their day with a cup of coffee. You start it by checking out a dozen suspicious moles.
Ooh, that's
right. Yes, there you go. Hypochondriac.
Right. Here's one. You choose your outfits based on how well they match your Band-Aids.
I like that one. How about you're certain that you've had malaria three times, even though you've never left the state of Wisconsin? And for those listeners in Wisconsin, right. I don't think there's a high rate of malaria.
No, probably not. Here's one. Your tongue looks weird one day. Wait, why does my tongue look weird? Oh, no. My tongue looks weird. Wait, nope. Oh, I just ate Cheetos. Never mind.
Oh, that reminds me of a time.
It's orange.
No, it reminds me of a time in grad school. My husband's in the control room, and he's already laughing about that. So we were very young, early married, you know, during our early marriage.
Yeah.
And we both got really sick. I mean, the flu. And when you're both sick, and we were in this married housing, it was just miserable. And we were taking all kinds of stuff to settle our stomach. So we had this Pepto-Bismol, these tablets that we chewed and stuff. And about an hour later, we looked at each other and we said something and somebody saw each other's tongues. Our tongues were black.
Black?
We were convinced that something terrible was wrong with us. And apparently that's what happens when you chew Pepto-Bismol tablets. We had no idea.
It makes your tongue black.
Yes, it makes your tongue black. And we really thought something terrible other than the flu was wrong with us.
I may do that just to play a joke on the kids.
Good. I can see you doing that to your poor daughters.
Well, definitely. That's
They're going to be traumatized, Chris.
Well, all joking aside, it's normal to worry now and then about your health. But when you worry to the extreme and it interferes with your life and those around you, that's a problem.
That's exactly right. And that's why we want to talk about how to live with someone who excessively worries. Hmm. For the hypochondriac, medical testing doesn't usually find anything wrong with the person, but they're convinced that they have a serious illness. So there are a lot of doctor visits with no diagnoses. And you're in your right mind. Mm-hmm. So it's not that somebody is off in terms of their own thinking, but they're just really preoccupied with illness.
A hypochondriac has lots of body complaints and minor things become major, like dizziness, or in my case, a headache. It means a brain tumor.
Right.
And a cough means lung cancer.
That's right. And this type of thinking results in people feeling hopeless and despairing. It can be a really tough way for people to live. And it is a psychiatric diagnosis if it persists for at least 6 months or more. And when that happens and the focus is on this excessive, preoccupied, worried about your health, it's called illness anxiety disorder.
Mm.
In the vernacular, we just call it hypochondriac.
Right.
But that's what that actual terminology is in the psychiatric diagnostic world.
Well, if you're concerned this might describe someone you know or even you, listen to these 10 questions. If you answer yes to most of these, you might need the help of a therapist.
Okay, so let's go over the 10 questions, okay? So here's number one. I become afraid when minor things that go wrong in my body, so the things you mentioned, a sneeze, a cough, an occasional headache, a sore throat, throat, but you become very, very concerned about that.
Mm.
So that's question number one.
Checking your body for signs of sickness often and regularly.
Yeah, that's the second question. So if you're doing that, you know, again, we're talking about when it's at excess. So
right.
a lot of people will check their body for, you know, moles or something else. But when you're doing it constantly, then you need to start thinking about this. Number three is I focus on a specific organ in my body or I look for a specific disease like cancer.
What about frequently talking about an illness?
That's number four. Mm. That's one where you're constantly, you know, I have, you know, symptoms that remind me of some awful disease and you're bringing it up with people and you're talking about that, which relates to number five, which is I make a lot of doctor visits.
Mm. First name basis with your doctor.
Right. Mm.
What about spending time searching the internet for diseases and symptoms? That's number six.
So, I mean, that's so easy to do today.
Mm, it is.
I have to confess that whenever I get something, I will go to the internet and try to put in the symptoms and see if I can figure it out myself. I've actually been right maybe one time.
Huh.
But it was a serious thing, and I actually picked up on it from doing that. But I would not recommend that. We're not recommending that for people who have excessive worries because you can see how that would just feed that.
Mm.
Number seven is even when I have a medical test and it's negative, you just feel no relief.
Mm. Here's one, and I've seen people act like this before. Avoid certain places and activities for fear that they might contract something or be exposed to an illness. That's number eight.
So how do you do that when you have kids? Think about all the times where you're touching kids that are sneezing and coughing and kids come to your house and they're touching everything. But if you're a hypochondriac, you're walking around with the spray, you know, the spray bottles and the wipes and you're doing everything to keep yourself from getting that. And actually, that's not good for you because you're not building up an immunity to the diseases and the bugs that are around you. So number nine is I think any pain in my body indicates a serious problem. So you're kind of oversensitized to those pain signals.
Well, here's the last one, Dr. Linda. What do you think about this? People in my family feel the same and talk a lot about illness. They all just sit around and complain about how bad they feel.
Yeah, and that is one of the things that happens because if you have a close relative who's a hypochondriac, you might do the same thing. So you're in training. You're hearing people focus on illness. You're hearing the worried thoughts. And as a result of that, you start to pick that up and start to worry too.
Right. Does that mean that excessive worry runs in families?
It does. I think we did a show one time on the worrying gene. We talked about that Yale researchers discovered a worrying gene that is somewhat genetically transmitted for people.
Yeah.
But again, it's kind of the same of you might have a predisposition to worry. And then on top of that, you hear a lot of health worries. So it passes down generation to generation.
Well, do we know what causes this type of excessive worry about health?
The causes vary. You know, you can have a legitimate health problem and that can maybe set this kind of worrying off. We don't really know, Chris, what the exact factors are, but we think it has something to do with your belief system. You have this misunderstanding of physical sensations and how those are linked with a misunderstanding of how the body works. So you take a small pain and you think that that means something really bad and big. Sometimes with your own personal history, you've had bad health experiences in the past, and you might have had a lot of illness, and then you might think, oh, I'm ready for more because I'm so prone to this. Or a high percentage of patients with hypochondria also have major depression, panic disorder, obsessive compulsive disorder, or some type of generalized anxiety disorder. So it's kind of grouped together with other psychiatric symptoms.
Well, we are just getting started on understanding illness anxiety disorder, or what used to be called hypochondria. Stay with us as we take a short break. More on how to deal with someone who struggles with this on the Dr. Linda Mental Show.
Threats of war, racial tension, divorce, natural disasters. If you are like me, sometimes I just have to turn off the news and remind myself that there is actually good in our world. It's so easy to listen to all the bad news and become worried. Worried about the future, about the Middle East, crime, finances, health, family problems, and, you know, so it goes. But Scripture tells us to take those worried thoughts captive, to be anxious about nothing. That is one of the reasons I wrote Letting Go of Worry. I didn't want worry to grip so many of us and cause us to lose our peace. So the next time you hear bad news, remind yourself to take those anxious thoughts captive. If you need help doing so, Letting Go of Worry is a good resource and will walk you through the steps to living in peace and contentment.
Letting Go of Worry by Dr. Linda Mental, available on her website, drlindamental.com, and online.
Conflict is a part of every healthy relationship. How you deal with conflict is what will either grow or destroy relationships. Do you avoid? Maybe you become highly emotional and then regret what you said or did. Getting control of our emotions is not always easy, but it is possible. Hi, this is Dr. Linda Mental, and I wrote the book, We Need to Talk, in order to help all of us deal better with conflict. We Need to Talk, available at bookstores and online where books are sold.
Welcome back to the Dr. Linda Mental Show. And before we get back to our discussion about living with hypochondria, I want to remind you that Dr. Linda blogs weekly, has a free monthly e-newsletter, and keeps you aware of all things about relationships on her website, drlindamental.com. One of her books that relates to today's topic is Letting Go of Worry, a book that I highly recommend. And I think I have a copy too, don't I, Dr. Linda?
I don't know if you have a copy of that one.
Then I need one.
I know. I don't have any extras right now. I have to wait until I have a few left over.
That's right.
From an event.
Well, it is tough to be worrying about your health all the time, like we discussed in the first segment. It doesn't sound like a peaceful way to live at all.
It's not, and it's estimated that 1 in 20 Americans who visit doctors suffer from this disorder. So you probably haven't really thought much about this, because we kind of make fun of people with hypochondria or tell them to knock it off. But
right.
This is really a problem for people who have this. And I have found, Chris, that most people with hypochondria struggle with anxiety or depression or both. So it's related to a type of anxiety. The brain is so powerful that it can convince itself of illness. And just trying to convince the person otherwise usually just doesn't work.
So if you live with someone who has illness, anxiety, what can you do to help?
So the first thing would be to acknowledge the suffering it causes and lovingly encourage the anxious person to seek some kind of treatment or some help for it. Since you will be the one who will be helping the most with that anxious person, you're going to be helping them get better. You need to be supportive rather than frustrated. And that's hard for a lot of people because they just get frustrated with how much the person focuses on their health. So remember, this is a mental health disorder, so they need to get the help of a mental health professional. And consider going with the person to an appointment so that you can give your input about what you see and the severity of the symptoms that you're seeing, and so that you can receive some guidance from the therapist as well as to how you can respond and how you can help and be a part of the person's healing rather than their constant frustration.
What about learning more about the actual illness itself? I'm guessing that if you did a Google search on the term, it would help you understand it better. I didn't even know this was a mental health disorder until we prepared for the show.
I think learning more about the illness can help you understand what contributes to the problem. And it certainly can help you maybe with your patience and your empathy towards that person. And you will find tips on how to cope with this and not do what we call enable the problem.
Right.
So an enabler is someone who's kind of helping, keeping it going.
That's what I wanted to ask you about. Should you ask the person about their concerns, or does that make it worse?
So asking is good. You want to ask about them, but you want to put aside other things for a moment, make really good eye contact with the person, focus on understanding, to really understand what your loved one or your friend is expressing, and then encourage them to verbalize their fears about their health, but don't join in with it. So it's kind of a fine line between being very supportive, not showing too much concern, and trying to stay somewhat neutral in your answers, but you're showing that you're caring and you're listening.
Right.
And then you want to express that you understand their struggles without encouraging their obsessive thoughts in this area. So put a time limit on the conversation so that you don't reinforce illness talk.
See, this is so hard to do because you know they don't really have health issues.
I know. So health isn't really the problem. You have to think of it as the anxiety about their health is the problem. You're really working on the anxiety.
So you let the person talk for a little bit. But then what if they start to obsess again about their worries?
Yeah. So again, there's that fine line, right, where we're talking about being empathetic and understanding.
Yeah.
Try to discourage them from excessive worry, from checking, from researching, seeking a lot of reassurance from you. Don't reinforce their obsessions or their compulsions by automatically buying into their health concerns. So you would want to somewhat listen, but then kind of steer them away and remind them of what they've learned about the illness, that it really is about anxiety rather than their health. So it really does help to divert their attention to other issues or review some of the coping strategies that hopefully they're going to learn.
Okay.
Also remind them that their compulsive behaviors, although those are supposed to help them ease their anxiety, they're actually increasing their anxiety in the long run. So it's important to remind them that jumping to conclusions on what they've read online will likely just increase their anxiety and their stress and their stress symptoms.
So reassure them about their anxiety and ways to management rather than trying to convince them that they're not sick.
That's exactly right. That was a very succinct way to say it. But make it brief and only do it once. So don't keep doing that over and over again, or you're just going to reinforce that whole cycle.
What about if during this conversation they say they need to go to the doctor? Should you say no?
Would you say no?
I'm not sure what I would say.
I know. It's a little bit tricky, isn't it? I would just discourage excessive doctor appointments and point out that there are many drawbacks of making too many doctor's appointments, such as the cost.
Right.
You know, the stress of that, the time, the inconvenience, the additional fears that might come up. Because I'll tell you, it's almost like if you go to the doctor, they're going to find something that's going on with you. I had one of our physicians say that if we did an MRI on everybody, we can find stuff wrong with them.
Right.
I think I would just discourage that. And rather than going to the doctor, it would be better to encourage a counseling session to work through that anxiety.
Not to mention hanging around a doctor's office is the best place to get sick.
That's true. That's true, especially when you take your kids to the pediatrician,
Yeah. Speaking of counseling, what works with this type of worry?
So a type of therapy that works with illness anxiety disorder is exposure therapy. What exposure therapy usually does is it requires you to relive a painful experience, and then you confront the fear that's involved and you deal with the thoughts that are amplifying or increasing that anxiety. And over time, what happens if you keep exposing yourself to that fear, it reduces the anxiety and then it takes it away and you don't have to live with that health worry over and over. So you take an obsession, you confront it directly, and then let's just kind of do it. Let's say someone has an irrational fear that he has HIV. That person moves toward the fear, maybe spending time around somebody who has HIV, maybe going to a medical facility. And then the goal is to do something you've been avoiding. So you actually go into the fear, look at the fear, talk about the fear. And as you do that more and more, the fear goes away.
Seems scary for the person who's overly worried.
It is initially. It is. That's why people don't do it. They, see, when people feel anxious, they avoid. They don't go towards the fear,
right?
But that's exactly what you have to do, because over time, it's going to settle you down and it's going to stop having so much power over you because you've confronted your fear up close and you see it for what it truly is. It's just a fear. It's not reality.
I've never been through this with anyone, but it seems like it would require a ton of patience.
It does, because it takes time to reverse your thinking. Remember, your loved one is trying to make sense of their anxiety and cope with it as best they know how. And unfortunately, some people's nervous systems are just wired in such a way that it's really eager to trigger what we call the anxiety alarm in their head. And it's like an alarm goes off. And it's really difficult to turn it off. And even after they turn it off for a moment, it comes on again and it's louder and louder than ever.
I would guess that if this isn't treated, it could take a toll on any relationship, especially marriage. And it must be frustrating for the person who is anxious and for the spouse who has to watch the person suffer.
It is. And it usually leaves both people feeling helpless. And for that reason, it might be good to go to couples therapy. So the spouse needs to be calm and non-judgmental, but say that he or she is concerned about their spouse's reaction to medical situations. So when you see health worries coming out big time, you can steer the conversation too. Try changing the topic, bringing up something unrelated to the physical conditions. And here's one more tip. Preoccupy the hypochondriac with fun activities. When they start to complain about their aching bones, suggest a walk around the block. You know, tackle the perceived pain through physical activity. That's a great way to make them to forget about it.
What about medications? And I know you're not opposed to using them when they can help. Are there any that might help with this type of anxiety?
In some cases, antidepressants or anti-anxiety drugs, which I don't really like people to start taking those anti-anxiety drugs, but sometimes they can be beneficial. The antidepressants, the ones that we hear about, the selective serotonin reuptake inhibitors, they're called the SSRIs. A lot of people will know what those are, can be beneficial for people whose primary complaint is their anxiety, whereas there's another type of medication that people can take that's a serotonin. It's a different kind. Let me just say that without going through the name. And it's more focused on pain. So it depends on what you struggle with. You go to your doctor, they'll talk about your symptoms. But I would try the exposure therapy that I talked about and spiritual solutions that we're going to discuss in the next segment.
That's right, Dr. Linda. We do need to take a quick break. Back with more on living with a hypochondriac on the Dr. Linda Mental Show.
The other day I was cut off the road by a driver. Everything in me wanted to yell, "Hey, watch out!" but I restrained myself knowing that yelling at the driver would not do so much good, and it wasn't the best way to deal with my anger. Anger easily rises up in most of us. Anger, while a natural emotion, needs to be dealt with in the right way. The Bible tells us, be angry, but do not sin. So what is the biblical way to handle anger? Well, this is a question I answer in my short and easy book to read, Breaking Free from Anger and Unforgiveness. That small book has sold over 130,000 copies because of how practical and helpful it is to everyday living. So if you want to be angry, but not sin, practice what Scripture teaches. Breaking Free from Anger and Unforgiveness is available on my website, drlindamental.com, and online where books are sold.
You're listening to the Dr. Linda Mental Show, and Dr. Linda has written numerous books, including one we are discussing today, Letting Go of Worry, and that book has a chapter on health worries. You can find her book on her website, drlindamental.com, follow her on Twitter, at Dr. Linda Mental, and other social media as well, so you can keep up with lots of interesting things to know about making relationships work.
And I want to put a plug in, Chris. We have a fun little skit that you and I did on this topic as well that people will see on Instagram.
You and your camera, Dr. Linda.
I get you going. It's fun. We have fun.
I do want to ask you about something we discussed in the previous segment.
Yeah.
You were talking about exposure therapy and dealing with people with illness anxiety.
Yeah,
and
who have worries, excessive worry.
Right.
Right.
You use the example of someone who, let's say, they think they have HIV, taking them to a hospital and having them be with someone who actually has HIV. That sounds fairly extreme.
Yeah, because you would think that maybe they'll see it and they'll get even more worried.
Mm-hmm.
But you got to remember, they don't have HIV. They're
right.
Thinking they do. And so the idea is you're confronting the fear of that. And I don't know if you've ever been in hospitals a lot, mm-hmm. but when you first go into a hospital, a lot of times you're very afraid and
right.
kind of scared about everything you see. And after mm-hmm. you go in over and over and over, it just becomes second nature. And that's
right.
because you're exposing yourself to those very things that you were afraid of. The big word is habituating to the situation, which just means you're getting used to it.
Right. Well, as we wind down this last segment, let's talk about the spiritual side of excessive health worries. The Bible has a lot to say about worry in general.
So, right. We're talking about health worries specifically here, but there are numbers of worries that we can have, not just health worries. And I've got a whole bunch of chapters in the book that talk about the different kinds of worries we have. But our faith compels us to surrender those worries to God. We're supposed to place them in His hand, and we're supposed to allow His peace to fill our heart.
I like what Philippians 4:7 says. It's the peace of God, which transcends all understanding, will guard your hearts and your minds in Christ Jesus. We have to guard our minds against worry, don't we?
I just looked at that I was looking at that verse and when you were reading it, and it's interesting that it says that it will transcend all your understanding.
Mm.
Because a lot of times worry doesn't make sense.
Right.
Because it's a what if kind of situation. So the peace of God transcends that. It doesn't have to make sense. God's
right.
just going to transcend that. He's going to guard our hearts and our minds. So we have to remember that God is a resource, and He's actually the best therapist in the universe. He's the great physician, right?
Right.
So many times I fail to include Him in my worries, but His word is living, and it has power. Living a life of peace requires us to be accepting of these uncertainties that we face in our life. And there's mm-hmm. just so many of them. You could worry all the time if you let yourself.
And sometimes I do.
I know. Well, I think we all have to guard against that.
Right.
Our health is one of those uncertainties. And when you get older, like I am, Chris, I am a few years your senior here, it becomes even more and more of an issue. So there are things beyond our control that no amount of worrying is ever going to change. And there are risks with everything that we do as well. But nothing in our lives happens away from God's awareness.
It's easy to forget that God is with us, that He is Emmanuel, and that we don't face problems alone. We're tempted to worry on our own and think that we have to figure everything out.
But remembering that we have an advocate, He knows what we're going to face, and we don't have to face it alone. And because of His Spirit in us, we can embrace an uncertain future, and we all have an uncertain future because we can't see into the future. And that's a lot of what hypochondriacs worry about, is their uncertain health future.
So it takes an active faith life. We can't be passive about our God, who is healer, provider, deliverer, and so much more. How often do we rest in God's provision? If we're honest, not enough.
I think that's true, yeah. Even for me. It's one thing to want to be healthy, but if you're so invested in the outcome, in other words, if you're so invested in, I never want to hear bad news, I always want to be sure of what's going to happen, or I'm sure I'm going to hear bad news. That's the other side of that coin, right?
Right.
You're going to worry.
Mm-hmm.
So the worrier allows hopelessness and helplessness to overtake his or her thinking. He succumbs to circumstances and he limits God in the middle of them. Don't be that person. Operate in faith, knowing God can move any mountain. Fear really blinds us to such trust.
You know, it does, but I like what Psalm 32:8 says. I will guide you with my eyes, his eyes on ours. And as we've said so many times on this program, God is not bothered by our angst and concerns. Just read the Psalms.
That's right. And in Luke 21:14, Jesus reminds his disciples to make up their mind not to worry. So Jesus is going, make up your mind.
Yeah.
This is a choice. So this implies taking charge of our thoughts, our anxious thoughts. And there are times when we need to stop trying to figure it all out and really simply just trust God.
To let go of our health worries, we need to trust God with our health. Do what we can to be healthy, but trust him and be anxious less. It does boil down to trust.
It does. And Psalm 56:3 says, when I am afraid, I will trust in you. But I want to add that there's grace. We ask God to change us, to help us be anxious about nothing. But if you struggle with health anxiety, admit your powerlessness over this and allow God to do his good work in you. He knows your situation. He cares about your trouble, and he can work on your behalf. God invites us to cast our cares on him. So unload those health anxieties onto the Savior. Allow him to shoulder the burden and carry you. If you struggle with health anxieties, remember this verse out of Deuteronomy 31:8. The Lord himself goes before you and will be with you. He will never leave you nor forsake you. Do not be afraid. Do not be discouraged.
And as always, when we are afraid, we're told to turn to the Lord. Psalm 34:4 assures us, I sought the Lord and he heard me and delivered me from all my fears.
Well, that's a good one right there. But let's close with these two verses that are perfect also for dealing with health anxieties from Psalm 112. He will have no fear of bad news. His heart is steadfast, trusting in the Lord. His heart is secure. He will have no fear. In the end, he will look at triumph on his foes. Health worries, be gone. Well, that's all the time we have for today. Many thanks to our producer, Norm Mintel, our social media director, Kelby Keimig, our engineer, and my co-host, Chris Weigel, who makes this show a conversation. From all of us here at Faith Radio, we'll talk to you next weekend. In the meantime, remember, we're here, we're doing life together, and it's better when you don't have to do it alone. Well, thanks for listening to this conversation from the Dr. Linda Mintel Show. These podcasts are available because of listener support. You can make a gift now at myfaithradio.com. And thanks for sharing this audio link with a friend and helping us grow the impact of the Dr. Linda Mintel Show. Also, take a moment to subscribe to the podcast today at iTunes or your podcast player, and you'll never miss a show.